I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Azzurri fan. We're too nervous to make any childish innuendos in this episode. It's the final of Euro 2020, and Italy are in it to win it. With Spain somehow dispatched, it's back to Wembley to face England. We'll discuss whether football's home will in fact mean Rome in this episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome to the pod. Our man Oscar's done a bit of a runner today. We're hearing he's been poached by a rival podcast. I believe it's Coming Home Pod or something like that. So it's just Boaz and I with you here today. But we are told that Oscar will be back, although when that will be, I am not entirely sure. But yeah, let's meet the other squad member for tonight, Boaz in Tel Aviv. How are you doing?
I'm going to be putting it out there straight away that depending on results this weekend, Oscar may come back next week, or he may come back by the time Qatar comes around. So we'll see.
And how have you been?
I'm doing very well. The game against Spain, my heart has not stopped beating since then. And I'm very stressed about the final, but overall, it's a good summer.
Yeah, it's weird the way tournaments do that to you, isn't it? Like, the games come so thick and fast, and it's with a knockout form as well. You kind of feel like you've just recovered from one when you've got to go through it all again. If you're lucky and you make it to the latter stages, of course.
Yeah, and you commit to doing a podcast for every episode, and suddenly the team you're representing makes it all the way to the final, and now we're forced to do another episode regardless of the result. Hopefully we'll be happy at the end of this weekend, as I said.
Yeah, we'll get into it in a bit, but before we do, Boaz, have you got a beer, a civilized beer with you this evening?
I'm drinking a Hop Hop New England IPA. It's a collaboration between Greek brewery and an Israeli one, and I had it right at the beginning of the tournament, so I'm hoping it brings luck again.
Great. I've on the other hand have got myself it's another brew dog. I'm just getting lazy at this stage, but when you're doing podcasts every 2 days, it's a Hazy Jane. It's quite a nice one. Have it quite often. But anyway, let's get on to speaking about the football. You mentioned the Spain game. And yeah, I mean, it was horrifically stressful, wasn't it? What were your overall impressions of the game?
I think my biggest takeaway was perhaps Luis Enrique's unexpected tactical change, which was a genius move from him in the sense that he took out Morata and essentially played with a false nine. And this threw both Bonucci and Chiellini out of sync a little bit because they didn't know whether they had to follow their man or stay in position. Apparently, Luis Enrique had said that he'd seen how the Italy defense had dealt with Lukaku, and he thought he'd throw them something a little bit different. And I think that pretty much shaped the whole match. Italy had ridiculously low possession for this game. I think it was around 34%.
Yeah.
But for me, what gives me a little bit of confidence in this match was that Roberto Mancini made a very conscious decision to play in this way. He knew that Italy could probably not challenge Spain for ball possession, and therefore he preferred to leave the ball to them and kind of play on the counter-attack. And Italy's goal came from a counter-attack, so he was proven right, and probably could have also won it in the 90 with the chances that fell at Berardi's feet, amongst many others.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that it was quite that conscious, to be honest. I think Italy just really struggled to kind of keep the ball. I mean, Spain were so good for me at like intercepting, at reading the game. Busquets, much as he should have been booked about five times for professional fouls before he eventually was booked, but I mean, just his his reading of the game was incredible. And add to that, I think the number of times that Italy played crossfield balls, I think Chiellini was guilty of it at about two or three times at least, like crossfield balls that just went straight out of play. I just felt like Spain's passing was much sharper. And Italy, yeah, there was a lot of sort of wayward passing, which is really, really unlike Italy from what we've seen so far. Having said that, for me, absolutely, it's something that we've said, they proved that they know how to suffer and grind out a result. So, yeah, I think undoubtedly you've got to be happy to escape from a game like that. But, yeah, I don't know who these people were who said that they were watching the most enjoyable game of the tournament, because I was watching half of it from behind my sofa, to be honest. It was terrifying to me.
Yeah, I watched it between my hands, as you do with a horror movie. And I mean, I guess it's because we're invested. Apparently outsiders enjoyed it, but you have to say that there was a lot of chances on goal from both teams. So at least in terms of entertainment for the neutral, at least there was some offered. Then of course it went to extra time and it got a little bit more cagey. But I mean, you have to commend both sides for the way they approached the attacking end of the game. And this is obviously a Italian football focused podcast, but we'd be liars if we didn't say that Spain probably deserved to go through and that they played a fantastic game, probably one of the best performances of this tournament. But maybe on the basis of the tournament as a whole, Italy deserved a little bit more. And when it came down to penalties, a lot of people were very confident.
Yeah. But before we got to penalties, obviously there was a special moment that kind of sent everyone into delirium with Chiesa. That incredible finish. I mean, we have to say he's really, in this tournament, he's really kind of started looking the part now, don't we? He's kind of getting to that, very quickly getting to that sort of elite status, I would say.
Well, having scored the goal in the Coppa Italia final, it's clear that Freddie Church is a big occasion player.
There it is.
And in addition, even though Juventus had a generally lackluster season, at least by their standards, it has to be said that he was one of the shining lights throughout. Maybe he gets a little bit of stick, or he got a little bit of stick from fans because he plays for Juventus and because of the nature of his move from Fiorentina. And I was guilty of this myself. I felt the price tag at 60 million euros was perhaps a little bit steep. But on the basis of his performances this season, but especially how he's taken to the limelight in this tournament, I'd say that 60 million euros in today's market is a pretty fair price for him.
Yeah, and he looks like a big game player, doesn't he? And you often say of players that they hide away. I think Lukaku's often blamed of it, possibly unfairly, but Chiesa's the opposite. He seems to relish that stage.
And there was that little moment between Luis Enrique and Chiesa at the beginning of the extra time, I believe, when they were kind of having a little laugh between them. And I mean, I guess if Italy had lost, the media and the fans would have crucified him for that. But I thought it showed that he was very level-headed. And yeah, I'm playing a semi-final of a Euro here, but I'm still out here to have fun. I'm still here to play football. I think his attitude has been brilliant. And I like the fact that he metaphorically looked at Insigne and said, anything that you can do, I can do better. And took his copyrighted tira-gir shot.
Yeah, it was great. But then obviously Spain equalized through that Morata clinical finish. And that had us heading into extra time and then to dreaded penalties. I wasn't feeling great going into the penalty shootout, Boaz. I don't know. I've seen plenty of penalty shootouts where I've been less convinced that it was going to go against the team that I was supporting than this one was. How are you feeling heading into the shootout?
I was thinking about this a lot, and I came to the realization that penalties have given me both my two biggest personal victories in terms of football, one of which was Milan's victory in the Champions League against Juventus at Old Trafford, where myself and my brother were present, and Milan, of course, won on penalties. It was a terrible game, but when your team ends up lifting the trophy, you don't care. And the other one is, of course, the 2006 World Cup, where Italy deservedly went all the way, and then beat a France team that honestly should never been in the final. That was also a glorious occasion. But then I think about my first real footballing disappointment was at USA 94 with the iconic Baggio penalty, and Baresi, of course, also missed. Yeah. And I was actually crying for that. I was destroyed as a kid. It took me a few days to recover. And the other super painful penalty shootout was, of course, Istanbul, when we won't mention it on this episode, on this podcast. I'm already feeling tense, but when a clear Champions League for Andrei Shevchenko was stolen. Going into penalties, I mean, I hate penalties, and I'm never particularly confident about them. But you have to say that when your keeper is built like a tree, it gives you a little bit of an advantage. I felt that the attitude of the players stepping up was, they looked very confident. Obviously, it's easy to say that with hindsight, but I don't, even Locatelli with his miss, it didn't feel like he was going to miss, let's put it that way. Whereas the Spain players looked a little bit more tense, a little bit more, they looked more serious, let's say, let's put it this way. So it went in our favor, of course. And I think Jorginho knew exactly where he was going to put that penalty like 6 months ago when he was in his crib in London and he was sending some text messages back home to Brazil or something. He already knew, and I'm going to play a Euro semi and put the penalty over there.
Yeah, I was going to say, how cool was that penalty?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, anyway. I shouldn't really mention Ventura. I always mention Ventura in a negative light, and he's kind of a jinx, so we shouldn't mention him. But once more, I have to say, Ventura is the manager who said, I don't have a spot for Jorginho in my Italy squad. And you look at his performances throughout this tournament and you think, well, no wonder this guy didn't qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, completely changed days, aren't they? And yeah, obviously resulting in this final that we're looking forward to / dreading on Sunday against England. We're going to speak about that in a little bit. But before we do that, we have the final scouting report of these Euro 2020s. And it is the big one. It's England at Wembley. And our boy Oscar did find time to speak to his old friend, England fan and rising radio star Jesse about his expectations for the big game. So let's hear what they had to say.
Ah, hello, Adsuri fan. You will notice that I've been relegated to the scouting report section of the podcast. Obviously, there's a big conflict of interest with me being an Englishman. It wouldn't really be fair for me to be hosting the preview to the final. So Kenny, as a proud Italian and probably more importantly, a proud Scot, has taken over that duty. So here in the scouting report section, I have Jesse. Jesse is an actor and theatre maker, but probably more relevantly for this part, he's also a Londoner and a very keen supporter of England and a big fan of Gareth Southgate. Jesse, welcome to the pod.
Great to be here with you, Oscar. Sorry that you've been exiled from hosting the pod. I'm sure Kenny and Boaz won't have any vested interests of their own in the final.
Well, yeah, hopefully I can return to my position there soon and I won't be permanently banished. Although, on the other hand, maybe hopefully I will be permanently banished, about the result on Sunday.
Yeah.
Anyway, you are actually in London, so maybe you could give us a bit of a lowdown. What was the feeling on the street?
Yeah, I mean, I unfortunately wasn't able to go to the pub because I was having to do some online teaching. So I missed the first half, which I then later caught up on. But I mean, the videos I was getting from friends who were out of the pub and also obviously on social media, I think it was absolute pandemonium, really. I'm sure people have seen the videos of people climbing on top of buses, including while they're moving, people leaping out of tube carriages as the doors open, singing "Football's Coming Home." I could hear from my back garden, I could hear all the car horns kind of in the distance in central London. And I think there's an atmosphere of a kind of incredulity as much as anything. This is just completely uncharted territory for England fans. And I mean, Southgate and the team have done an incredible job in uniting what feels like the vast, vast majority of the country behind them.
Yeah, thanks for that. And Boaz has asked me to ask you whether or not it's coming home. Listeners won't be able to see this, but in the software we're using to record, your name is It's Coming Home. So I can only assume that's a yes.
Yeah, well, I think that is more in faith than in certainty. I think England have got a good chance, but I would make Italy favourites. I think it's going to be really, really tough. I think what's interesting is the two teams are quite similar in many ways. I've noticed Boaz, and I think Kenny as well, talking about this Italy squad, who I've been hugely impressed with, saying that, you know, there's no massive individual star in the Italian 11 or indeed in the squad. And I think it's kind of the same with England. Maybe Harry Kane, and obviously Sterling's had an incredible tournament. But the sides feel, you know, I think they are the two best teams at the competition. I would worry as an England fan about the Barella, Berratti, Jorginho midfield. I think the range of passing and just the composure on the ball makes me think that as good as Phillips and Rice have been for England, that's going to be very, very difficult to control the game there. And likewise, I think, you know, the success that we've had in the air in games against Ukraine, in the game against Ukraine, for example, with Maguire and Kane, I think that's going to be hard to replicate against the likes of Bonucci and Chiellini. But I am optimistic that we can cause Italy some problems with our attacking players. I think there's so much ability on the ball with Saka, Sterling, and then the likes of Foden, Grealish, Mount, whoever it is who starts, whoever comes off the bench, that I would fancy us running at some of those Italian defenders. I think it's England's best chance in many ways will be, you know, that ball across the 6-yard box or even winning a penalty as they did against Denmark.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right to highlight that midfield battle. I saw that our younger central midfield is struggling a bit, even against Højbjerg in the Denmark game. So it could be a worry. But
I think what was impressive, though, is was watching. I think the maturity of this England side is what everyone is so, I mean, in footballing terms, not in terms of age, but it's what people are so struck by, is because, you know, the way they move the ball around in that last 2-3 minutes of extra time, just keeping possession, getting the olays from the Wembley crowd, is just nothing like what you're used to seeing from an England team. So I do agree. And I think Italy, as I say, I would make them favourites, but I think there is a level of composure and calm and not being fazed seemingly by these big occasions, which is something that's new in this England team. And obviously they'll have the, you know, the Wembley advantage that I've seen Giorgio Chiellini's been speaking about today. I don't imagine he'll be particularly fazed by it, or the Italians in general. I absolutely loved the way he handled Jordi Alba before that penalty shootout. But I think it will be something that, you know, as much as it probably won't harm the Italians, I think it will give England a momentum, finally having that stadium feeling like a home ground, which for, you know, so many years it in many ways hasn't done.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Harry Kane deals with that kind of hijinks, if indeed it does get to that stage.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't see him being too fazed by it, can you?
I was going to say, I imagine he'd just look blankly at Giorgio Chiellini if Chiellini tried any of that with him. you're a Spurs fan, Oscar. You saw you saw Harry Kane against Bonucci and Chiellini, was it, a couple of years ago, playing in the Champions League. How did he get on?
Correct, yeah. It's similar in the way to how Lukaku got on against him in the Belgium game. But it looked to be getting the better of the early exchanges. Perhaps you're thinking, oh, Chiellini's like losing a yard on him here. But he failed to score and we ended up losing 2-1 in exactly the same way as Belgium. So he scored from the spot, of course, in the Belgium game. But unbeaten still from open play by Lukaku. And I think Harry Kane will struggle. Like you say, maybe the runners off Kane going ahead of him will cause them more issues.
Yeah, and I think so. I don't know what I don't know if it will be Emerson again, and is it Di Lorenzo who plays at right back for Italy? I think it was Di Lorenzo who gave away that penalty in the Belgium game. So in many ways, I feel like they can be got at probably.
Yeah, so very much looking forward to watching this game. I'm actually going to be watching it with a load of Italians that I play football with. So I'm going to need you to wish me the best of luck. What are your plans for watching the game?
I'm a little bit undecided at the moment. I think it'll either be with my housemates in my front room, or possibly venturing out to the pub to see what the atmosphere is like. It'll either be extreme desolation on the streets of London afterwards, or absolute carnage, for better or worse. There was a funny moment the other night in the semi-final where I think it was in the last couple of minutes of extra time where the commentator on ITV the camera cut to these England fans jumping around in the crowd celebrating, and he just went full Alan Partridge and was saying stuff like, I think he was going, well, you can't really blame them after the year that we've had. Do what you want tonight, you know, all bets are off kind of thing. And me and my housemate just looked at each other and went, did he just cancel like COVID restrictions for the nation? And then he was obviously doing the backpedal on that, saying, oh, whatever you do though, you know, wear a mask and make sure you're socially distanced. For better or worse, I think that'll go out the window if they win. But yeah, it's going to be incredibly exciting. And I think a great game. Just quickly wanted to say as well, a mention for Denmark, who, you know, just had an incredible tournament, and I think were very unlucky with the penalty, obviously. Thought Schmeichel was incredible. And yeah, if I weren't an England fan, obviously would have been rooting for them as the neutral's favourite.
Well, yeah, I imagine there might be a few people dialing in sick on Monday morning, either way.
Seems
in the UK,
likely, yeah.
Unless you get a bank holiday, of course. So fingers crossed for that.
Yeah.
but anyway, thanks very much for joining me and giving me your thoughts. You know who I'll be supporting on Sunday. Don't need to share that one with the listeners. So back over to you, boys. And it's coming home.
It's pronounced Rome. Guys, football's coming Rome. But anyway, Oscar, we can speak about that next time you're on the pod, of course. Thank you very much to Oscar and Jesse for that. Great to hear your views, Jesse. Boaz, back here. It's Italy versus England. It's Wembley Stadium in front of 60,000 to 70,000 fans. Looks pretty daunting. How do you fancy Italy's chances?
I mean, for superstitious reasons, I'm always going to downplay Italy's chances just because that's the Italian way. And to be honest, as you said, it's pretty much an away game for the final against, and Italy will not have any or will not have many supporters in tow. So on paper, at least, that should benefit England very much. But Italy are the kind of side that enjoy playing in adversity. The semi-final against Holland in Holland in Euro 2000 immediately springs to mind. But there are numerous examples of Italy triumphing away from home, or at least in very hostile situations. And you'd be a fool to discount Italy after the tournament they've had. So yeah, I mean, it feels like UEFA did everything in their hands to help England out in this particular tournament, but
controversial.
But let's see how it plays out. I mean, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a huge advantage for England, really playing in front of their home crowd. I would say, again, coming back to what we've said a few times on the podcast in the knockout stages, it is 50-50. I would think on paper, I would have Italy as probably shading it, just in terms of how well they're playing as a team at this competition. I think England were excellent, despite going through with a very controversial penalty decision yesterday. I think regardless of that, they were, at least for the last hour of that, they were the better team, and they certainly gave as good as they got in the first hour. But I think Italy have been the better team throughout the tournament. If you look at this on paper, if it was at a neutral venue, I would think Italy would probably be the favourites, but I don't know, in front of 60,000 to 70,000 fans, you know, at a time where the fans are hungry and haven't seen a live game for God knows how long. I don't know. I'm definitely worried. I'm also obviously worried about Sterling, who's been one of the breakout star. Well, to call him a breakout star is a bit ludicrous. He's very much already a star, but he's definitely been one of the stars of the tournament. And I do worry a little bit with Spinazzola, you know, being out. I think Italy missed him greatly in the Spain game for sort of his attacking outlet. And I kind of wonder, whoever comes into that left back role is going to have to handle Sterling. And again, with a back two, so that you're not going to have a left sided centre back who can come over and offer cover. And I don't know. I wonder if Di Lorenzo might be the answer, as obviously he moved over to left back in that last game. Maybe having a right back playing at left back against Sterling, who likes cutting in, might be good. I don't know. What do you think? What are your views on, I guess, on Sterling?
We didn't really mention it in the previous segment, but I felt that most of the Italy side underperformed against Spain. But perhaps the one shining light was Di Lorenzo with his porn star Tash.
And I fully agree. He was great. He had a great game.
He was very present physically, but also he was very good at kind of launching the attacks, but he didn't get forward too much, which is what we needed in that match. You asked me specifically about Sterling. I've got to say, I've always been a fan, and I don't understand some of the criticism he gets back in England, although maybe this tournament will be his redemption. And he's definitely a very scary proposition. I'm not sure Italy have played a player quite like him so far in this tournament. Perhaps Belgium had players who were actually his teammate, De Bruyne, and other midfielders who are on a similar level, but different kind of players. Obviously, he's very quick and will dart into the area and maybe drag his leg here and there. But I was very impressed with Kane's performance in the semi-final. I thought that his passing range was highly impressive. And as I said, I think those two together are probably where England are slightly better than Italy. I'd pick Kane over Immobile, unfortunately. And perhaps I'd also take Sterling over Insigne, despite Insigne being a total legend. But elsewhere on the field, I think the teams match up there's more balance in the matchup. And I possibly, as Jesse and Oscar alluded to, the Italy midfield is slightly superior. Jorginho, of course, I don't have to say too much about him. He's a Champions League winner. He's a total metronome. And Verratti is slowly coming back to form in this tournament. And those two together are great. But Barella, despite not having the best game against Spain, he's also been really fantastic in this tournament. And if not Barella, then there's plenty of talent on the bench for Mancini to turn to in case he wants to switch it up a little bit. I would probably keep Jorginho and Verratti together just because Mancini has built his whole tenure on that partnership.
Yeah, of course, Barella, you mentioned how good a tournament he's had. Obviously, we have to also mention how great a season he's had for Inter as well. One of the absolute stars this year, really. Great. Well, I'd like to say I'm looking forward to the game. Did you want to add something before we move on?
I've heard a lot of people, especially Azzurri fans, parrot the view that Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips, who are in the England midfield, they don't play for a big club. They haven't had any Champions League experience, and therefore they're there for the taking. But we have to remember that Locatelli, who for now plays for lowly Sassuolo, has been one of Italy's midfield stars. And Pessina, although of course he plays for Atalanta, who are now perennial Champions League challengers, Atalanta are still a quote-unquote small club. And so, again, I wouldn't look down on where these players are coming from, but I think that tactically, at least, England should be an easier proposition for Italy because Italy will want to hold the ball. And I don't think the English midfield will be doing that as happily as Spain were, of course.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. I mean, Spain was a nightmare proposition, really, for Italy. Just given the game that Mancini has kind of built this Italy team around, Spain just didn't allow them to do that. And you'd like to think that they'll perhaps have more chance to do that against England. I was going to say that would like to say that I was looking forward to the game on Sunday, but dreading it slightly as you always do these occasions, I think. A lot of nervous energy in the build up to that. We're going to move on shortly to best of the rest and honorable and dishonorable mentions, but first, Boaz, you wanted to discuss Sarri, his first interview since becoming Lazio manager, and he had some choice words about Juve, didn't he?
Yes, Maurizio Sarri had been suspiciously quiet for several months, and so he gave an interview to one of the Italian sports news channels, and basically he seemed to kind of pull some arrows from his back, or some knives out of his back. Sorry. For a start, he said that the Juventus league title win last season was kind of taken for granted, both outside of the team, but crucially within the club, and that they didn't even celebrate the victory. Everyone went out for dinner by themselves, is what he said. And this year, they're celebrating a fourth spot like it was the best thing that ever happened to them. Another thing he said was that already all the way back in October, he had a meeting with his staff, and he said that if they don't change their ways and start playing more quote-unquote Juventus style, then they'll be fired within 2-3 weeks. And they all agreed to start playing a more conservative type of football, knowing that they would get fired regardless at the end of the year. So, I mean, knowing how the season went last year and how Juventus took a really big gap on the top, and to know now that the staff essentially knew that they were going to be shown the door within a couple of weeks is quite eye-opening. The last thing he had to say that I thought was super interesting was that dealing with Ronaldo was never simple. It's like dealing with a multinational company, and sometimes the interest of the multinational company contrasts with the interest of the club. And he says that the guy has more followers than all the Serie A clubs put together. So obviously with that following comes a certain kind of arrogance. At the same time, he also praised Ronaldo's professionalism. So, I mean, this is Sarri on fire as far as I'm concerned.
Perhaps a little bit of an insight into the motivation that got Juve over the line as well in that season.
And I'm looking forward to Pirlo giving a similar interview in like 6 months' time.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's Pirlo's style, to be honest. But yeah, it'd be interesting to kind of have been a fly in the wall, really. But anyway, yeah, we must move on. So we're gonna whiz through best of the rest this week. We're gonna start off with the news from yesterday that Salernitana have been given the go ahead to take part in Serie A. Obviously, there were discussions about whether they were going to be expelled because of the rules that wouldn't have allowed them to take part, because Lotito, who obviously is the Lazio owner, also was owner of Salernitana. But they've been given the go-ahead to play next season under three conditions, which are that Lotito is fully divested from Salernitana by the 31st of December, that there is an independent third party to scrutinize this process and ensure full compliance, and that there will be no transfer dealings at all between Lazio and Salernitana. So that includes loans, sales, anything, until obviously they are completely separate entities. Moving on to other news, Giroud is reported to have agreed to sign for Milan for a fee of 2 million euros, absolute bargain, if you ask me. And staying on Milan news, there's just a few things, a few confirmed things that have been in discussions over the last few weeks. Tonali has officially become a permanent Milan player. And in Rome, Pau Lopez has moved to Marseille. That move has become official. Obviously, we've spoken about it recently, but now confirmed. Spezia have officially appointed Thiago Motta as manager. Famous, obviously, for the 2-7-2 formation. And what else have we got? We've got Fijici have written to the Italian government asking for stadiums to be reopened for the new season in line with other major European leagues. Apparently, obviously, it was 25% is the proposal that stadiums would be reopened at. But apparently a lot of clubs saying that is just completely unfeasible and doesn't actually make any sense for them to open it at that level. Final point is that there are a few managers officially presented today, official presentations of deals that had been previously announced. Spalletti at Napoli, Juric at Torino, and Inzaghi at Inter. Buzz, I think you wanted to mention something about Fijici there.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that what the clubs are demanding is that people who have been vaccinated be allowed back into the stadium. And that way the clubs will be able to fill a whole stadium, but in theory, it will be safe. And I don't think that's a crazy proposition. I think it's in line with other commercial dealings happening in Italy right now. So I don't see why football should have any different treatment.
I think that's fair and rational. As someone who is probably quite conservative in terms of how quick I would want things to reopen, I would agree with you, Boaz. Right, so we're moving on to honourables and dishonourables now. Boaz, you wanted to start with some worrying news about Sassuolo-owned Babacar.
Yes, Babacar, who's played for Fiorentina, Padova, Modena, Sassuolo and Lecce before moving to Turkey in 2020 as part of a loan deal, but essentially it's still owned by Sassuolo, had a cardiac spasm during training earlier today while training in Turkey. He was in hospital and he's posted a picture that he's doing fine and wrote in Italian that he thanks all his friends, family and supporters for asking how he was. But still, it's especially in light of the Christian Eriksen episode, it's always kind of eye-opening or shocking when a professional sportsman has a medical issue, particularly a heart issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously wish him all the best for a speedy recovery, a speedy and full recovery. Moving to slightly brighter news, you also have an honourable for the Italian national team, but I think Insigne in particular.
I think in amongst all the suffering that was the 120 minutes against Spain, the fact that Spinazzola was not there was obviously very evident on the pitch, but it was a really nice gesture from Insigne, but I guess from the whole team, to bring out his number 4 shirt and make sure it was center of all the celebrations, because while he's no longer going to be available to play, he's still very much an integral part of this squad. And it goes back to what we said on earlier episodes, that there's a real team spirit in this Italy squad that maybe has not been seen as much in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got an honourable mention for Damsgaard. Of course, it's my goals honourable, and it's for his absolutely wonderful free kick against England, all of about 25 possibly yards. And just when you see it from behind, just the technique with which he hits it, the pace at which it goes past Pickford, just fantastic free kick. And the first free kick to be scored at Euro 2020, who knows, probably, possibly, the only one. But yeah, honourable to Damsgaard. Boaz, you've got an honourable for Luis Enrique, the Spain manager.
We mentioned earlier in the episode that Luis Enrique won the tactical battle in the Spain-Italy game, and his decision not to play a striker was probably a masterstroke, and had his players been slightly better at finishing, he probably would have been in the final right now. But I want to give him an honourable for being magnanimous in defeat as well. He said, I'm really happy for what I've seen. The players played at a very high level, both teams. And I can't really say much to my guys. They gave their best. And now he said, I'm really sorry for England. He said this before England played Denmark, by the way. But he said, I'm really sorry for England, but I'm going to be supporting Italy in the next game.
Yeah. Classy guy. And obviously he's got ties with Italy. So, you know. Fair enough as well.
And he looks at that year in Rome, despite it being very tumultuous, as being very important to his career. So
good guy. We like him. I've got an honourable for. I wasn't sure who to give this to. Whether to give it to the Italian team or whether to give it to the Italian nation. I've decided to give it to Mancini, and it's an honourable because Calcio Finanza are reporting that Italy-Spain had a domestic broadcast audience of 20 million in Italy for the semi-final against Spain, which is the highest figure for a football match since the semi-final of Euro 2012, when Italy played against Germany, obviously came through victorious in that game. But yeah, just after the catastrophe of 2018, it's an honourable to Mancini for reigniting Italy's passion for the national team.
This is something we haven't touched on in any episode of the Euro, and it's actually something that it's always on the back of my mind. But most big nations are used to seeing their teams every 2 years at the tournament. But because of Ventura, who I'm mentioning again, we haven't seen Italy at a major tournament for 5 years. So yeah, it makes it doubly as exciting. And every time that anthem is played, it's just glorious.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It is. It's great to be back. Boaz, you've got an honourable for Chiellini.
I mean, Chiellini's antics throughout this tournament have been brilliant, but I'm giving him an honorable for his behavior just before the penalty kicks, where the whole world, including myself, felt super tense. And here's this guy cracking a huge smile, kind of joking around with Jordi Alba, not giving him the time of day. Jordi Alba clearly trying to get some headspace, and there's Chiellini bear hugging him, squeezing his cheek, calling him a liar. It's fantastic. And
it's so relaxed.
I have to say, once I saw that, I was kind of slightly more relieved, and yeah, total honorable for Chiellini.
Fair play. And I'm going to do a Scudetto first here and give Chiellini another honorable, a double honorable shock. And this is for the end of the penalty shootout, actually, because when Jorginho scored that Kulusevski penalty, obviously, as always happens, the entire Italy team ran over to celebrate with Jorginho. But Chiellini happened to be standing right next to Locatelli. I'm not sure if intentionally or not, but right next to Locatelli, who had obviously missed his penalty and must have had his heart in his throat throughout that entire thing. And just as Locatelli was running off to celebrate with the rest of the team, he just grabbed him before he could get away and gave him the biggest hug, before obviously both of them proceeding to run off and join the rest of the team in celebration. But I thought that was really, really nice. And, you know, for any criticism anyone can have of Chiellini, it was a real, like, insight into how much of an actual captain the guy is. So yeah, honorable for me for that. And we're going to finish off the honorable mentions here, Boaz, with we haven't had a dishonorable today, actually, which is positive.
So I'm going to shock you and add a dishonorable into this honorable. So it felt to me like stewards at Wembley Stadium aren't quite sure what their job is. Bonucci went down into the crowd, and hugged some of the Italy fans,
was
bizarrely stopped quite aggressively by a steward who obviously felt he was a fan that came down into the stadium. So I think that's a slight dishonorable for the steward for not immediately recognizing Bonucci. But on that note, I mean, somehow a pitch invader managed to get on the pitch and join the Italy team in celebrations, jumping up and down. So again, stewards, where are you? But this is an honorable to Marco Verratti, who doesn't speak Italian, according to our last episode, but he was hugging this random imposter for a few seconds, jumping up and down with him. And then clearly seen on TV, he turns to him, and I hope whoever is editing this episode beeps me out, but if not, I'm sorry. But he looks at him and he says, "Who the fuck are you?" It's a glorious moment.
Amazing, fantastic, perfect, and what a way to end the episode. We are going to be back after the final with our either our gloating or our
tails between our knees.
Yeah, one of the two. But yeah, other than that, I think all I really have to say is thank you very much to all of the contributors who have given us their insight from all of the various countries throughout this Euros special season of Scudetto. To all the listeners as well who have listened in. Of course, as always, remember that Scudetto is on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you really get your audio. So please do subscribe. Other than that, we'll speak to you on the other side, guys. Enjoy the final.
Forza, ragazzi!
La Juventus è campione d'Italia. Questa data, il 6 maggio.
Tutto in anticipo, la Roma è campione d'Italia per la stagione 2000-2001.
Il titolo del 2008. Sedicesimo scudetto per la squadra nerazzurra.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.